I'm David Schreiner Khan, and this is Smashing the Plateau. No matter how successful you are, there's probably at least one area where roadblocks are keeping you from fully achieving your goals. Fortunately, you've come to the right place. Every expert I interview on this podcast is different, but they all have one thing in common. They know how to fix problems that keep people stuck. Our discussion may raise some questions in your mind, and I really want to hear from you, our listeners. I really mean that. So please connect with me on LinkedIn or Twitter. And if you'd be willing to share this episode with your colleagues and friends, that would be great. It would also mean a great deal to us if you leave a review on iTunes, which would help others find the show. Today, I'm pleased to welcome Daniel Maugh. Daniel is a co-founder of Hacksaw, an award-winning UK design agency, and he's an all-around web expert. Daniel is passionate about making things easier for all web users and keeping websites on their toes so that they make a valuable return on investment. Daniel, welcome to the show, and I wondered if we could start off by talking a little bit about why you are so passionate about making things easier for web users.
Hi, and thanks for having me on the show. Great to be here. The whole thing about making things easier is we've got much less space to allow people to move around now. And what I don't mean that is in actual physical space. The majority of people now are entirely mobile. There's a statistic I read towards the end of last year, and it was around 76%, don't quote me exactly, but it was late 70s, that the amount of people in their homes with a desktop computer still use their mobile device to browse the web. I'm not one of those people because I find it much easier to do things on desktop when you can see. Plus, I end up multitasking. There's always more than one thing you end up doing. But yeah, it was a very high percentage, like I said, late 70s, that people have got desktop computers, laptops, still use tablet and iPhone. Well, mobile.
Remarkable.
Sorry.
I didn't realize it was that high.
It surprised me. It's just fascinating that that's the world we live in. So we've got all these small screen sizes. Therefore, everything needs to be at the very fingertips. And to convert those people, we've got to make it as easy as possible and as fluid as possible.
And why is it that you're so interested in this particular area?
Well, I'm quite easily frustrated by things on the web, working in the industry for as long as I have been. If I go on to something and it doesn't work straight away, it makes my blood boil. I can't control it. It's just like, I'm off and I'm not doing it again. I will go somewhere else. If I do that, there's got to be a lot more people that do that. Things need to work straight away to keep the trust. So to convert the people into purchasing something or working with you, things have to work and you have to keep them interested and you just got to pull them in. So making things as easy as possible just helps do that.
So let's give an example for our listeners. What might be something that wouldn't work straight away that with some tweaking or fixing, it's a much better user experience?
I actually have a very recent example of that. I actually get married next Saturday.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And we were just trying to buy a suit for our nephew, who was only 2 years old. And we'd found a suit that was perfect for him to match the suits that I will be wearing and my groomsmen will be wearing. And my fiance wanted to buy that there and then. So she found the website, which was mobile friendly. It was a very nice website, easy to use. It was great. Coming to payment, she wasn't able to use any of her debit cards. It just kept failing validation. It wouldn't let her choose the correct card that she was trying to use. She's got her personal and our joint account, which are different card types, like MasterCard and Visa. It wouldn't let her change which card she wanted to use. She couldn't make the purchase. So we had to wait until we got back into the house and do it on desktop. Now, fortunately, how I said I wouldn't use that again, it was imperative that we got that suit just because it worked ordinarily. Probably just thought, well, that's just a bit of a pain. What's the deal there? Not everybody will be as gracious to say, well, I'll go and try it again on something else. Often they're using a computer or a phone or whatever. They're still sort of web entity. So if it doesn't work on there, they're not going to go back because they need to get something that works on what they're using.
Yeah, that's true. I know that Amazon, as an example, specializes in making checkout really easy.
Yeah.
And making the user experience really easy. And I wonder how important that has been to their growth.
It will be absolutely massive. Another great example is just to look how much smoother eBay has made checking out with PayPal. It's much, much better. It's still a bit convoluted because you've still got to come from eBay and then you've got to log into your PayPal account and then you can check out. But the process has got much smoother from going from eBay to the PayPal website back and things like that. Everything is getting tighter and tighter and much nicer to use. But it will be monumentally significant in improving their mobile sales, without a doubt.
So with this example as backdrop, where you can make some changes, perhaps even small changes in the user experience that will help your business grow substantially. In your own experience with your own business, what have been some points when you have been at a plateau?
Me personally, or the business?
Either.
There was a few years ago where we decided to change our entire customer service process. Because we were growing and things were getting busier, things just started to slip. Emails might get missed, or if something was sent to the client that had not received it, there was no way we could say, right, this has gone to you on this day. Here it is, you know, sort of a paper trail, so just back everything up. So we made quite some significant changes, developed some new processes internally, purchased some CRM software, integrated it with our emailing system, which was no more work. It just made everything much, much smoother. So every email that was sent automatically went into one central system attached to our clients and all their details, all their company details, so that anybody at any point, whether they were away in a meeting, if the phone rang, anybody in our studio could find something, whether that be a file or traced back to when an email was found and sent or replied to. All we had to do was auto BCC an email address and then put everything onto the CRM system. It just sorted things out massively. And it's just, it was a bit of a mindset as well, rather than receiving an email and then reaction is to reply to an email straight away, always. But when you're in the middle of something, whether it's coding or design or whatever that be, sometimes you just can't always do that. That's another area where things would just slip and end up being 2 days for a reply to an email. So we had sort of mentality change where just ping a client an email back straight away, just saying, thanks for this, I'll get back to you as soon as possible. It's that reply and communication where you give people the knowledge that, yes, I've got this, rather than having to send an email the day later or 2 days later saying, have you got this? When the reply is, well, yes, I have, but I've been too busy to get back to that. So they're just a little one-liner just to give them that, yes, I've got this, thanks. Those few changes that I just mentioned there, it made a huge difference just for how clients perceived our communications. And plus we got the backup of anybody being out of the studio. You know exactly what they're doing, whichever client.
How did you know that you were at a plateau or you had stalled or you needed to make some of these changes?
That came from, it was actually a new client we were going for. And they said they'd heard a few things which were on customer service level. It was more about communication, that one. They'd heard things that weren't great and they felt that that was quite discerning. Fortunately, at this point, we'd kind of already got some sort of inkling that this thing was slipping. So we'd already started to make some changes internally just for picking things up in the office, you know, just hearing people talking either on the phone or something like that. That's when it really kicked in. It's like, right, we need to make this change. It just happened there. And then it was like, right, we're going to do this. Everybody needs to switch on.
So Daniel, what kind of tips can you offer entrepreneurs to take some time away from working in their business to thinking about what kinds of relatively minor changes they can make that might have a huge impact, like you just described?
Yeah, I mean, getting away from the machine, the office, everybody doesn't want to do that because they're busy being busy. Cut a day, 2 days, or whatever you can take out of not being in front of your machine and just having the ability to just let your mind sort of not be focused and just open up a little. It's massive. I mean, you need to think about that if you were the client. Are you being treated the right way? Are you getting not only the service, communication? Is everything as you want it to be? And if there's even an inkling of, I'm not sure, or yeah, I guess that's okay, then there's obviously room for improvement. There's always room for improvement. Either say, yes, I am very good at that, or we do this very well. In that slight inkling where, I guess we could kind of do this better, then that's where the need to improve needs to be. But you've got to take the step back, because you can't see it because you're in it. You've got to step back and be able to look at everything from a sort of an outside view.
How do you manage to have the discipline to take what sounds like the time off from the business to actually think about how to make the business better?
It's become force of habit now, which is quite fortunate to say. I guess it depends on some circumstance. Anybody listening to this now, I would suggest doing it as much as they possibly can and choosing a different area what they work in to look at and take a view of it. For us, it did take, there was something that actioned it, something happened that forced us to action it. And I believe you can be that just by being proactive and better yourself at every point.
So if it's force of habit, what structure do you use now to take that time away from your business to work on improving it?
Me, I'm a bit of a morning guy. So when I go to work, I'd like to go to work early. Earlier the better, really. I'm not talking about 4 a.m. anything crazy like that, but sort of between 6 and 8. Just get a bit of quietness in the studio. You get so much more done. It's crazy. Just that half an hour, an hour. The phone's not ringing, even if there is a staff member and another colleague or anything like that. Because the phone isn't ringing, the focus is crazy. I can get a day's worth of work done between 7 and 9, without a doubt. If I go in at 9, the phone's ringing, there's more emails, there's people asking questions, developers, designers, whoever. there's always something to take your attention away. Even when you put the headphones in. I mean, headphones in at a desk looking at a computer screen is a universal sign of do not bother me. But people do. That's where I get my things done earlier when there's no distraction. Obviously, people I work with are the other way around. They come in, they do their working hours, but they're night hawks, they stay up at night. There's zero distraction. And obviously, that's not at the studio, that's at home. They've just got that willingness to be there until the early hours and they can get a real focus on a bit of extra work or taking a look at yourself and looking at other things. But people do differ. It's even going out for lunch and actually going out for lunch, not just having a sandwich at your desk or whatever. It's like leaving where you are. I'm quite fortunate there's a few parks where our studio is. We can just go and eat there. Some fountains, I can get my lunch there and just 10 minutes where you're just thinking about nothing and that just frees you up. And then you could just start from there.
Mm-hmm.
There's plenty of times where you can fit things in. Sandwiches are the best.
Right. So what I'm hearing is sort of planning time for nothing is useful for the deeper thinking about changes you need to make.
Might yeah.
have a transformational impact.
That's right. And sometimes you will just think, I need to get out to have a look at this. But if you plan to go with nothing, you've got nothing to think about. But then once you stop, that's when the mind starts worrying about anything. If you can sit down and you will obviously start to think about, oh, that car's blue. That's a big truck. That's how my mind works. I look at everything. And then when I get bored of looking at everything around me, that's when I'm kind of bored of my surroundings. So you start thinking about other things. What about this? What about that? What about the other?
Yeah. Has there been a breakthrough that you might want to share that has come about through one of these off times?
Yeah, well, I'm actually going through a bit of a change. I would say a fundamental change for myself at the minute. My previous sort of skill set has always been a developer, a web developer. But I've obviously moved and got more hands-on with project development and dealing with clients and things like that. So I kind of found it hard to not really have anything to show at the end that I've actually worked on, which kind of sounds silly because I'm managing the staff members, the clients and things like that. So at the end of it, my overall management has produced this thing. Whatever that be. Mentally, I've always struggled on that not actually doing anything that's gone into it, if you understand what I'm saying. So I've been struggling to find an outlet of where I can help people and give them advice and help them do something. I started thinking about it too much. And then it was literally a handful of weeks ago with a friend who said, you're talking about something I've got no idea about. And it was like, oh yeah, just because I work in an environment where everybody knows about everything, you kind of forget that there's a lot of people out there who don't have a clue. But it did take a long time, longer than you should have done. Because I was looking for some specific thing for me to say, right, I'm going to do this. Like we've got designers who, in their spare time, create these masterpieces of whatever, not just on computers. They make things, they make furniture, they make absolutely anything. Now I was looking for that one thing. I don't have that one thing. I'm a bit of a generalist. So I've got a wide knowledge of whatever that might be, whether it's web, whether it's user experience or speaking or whatever. It did take me longer than it should have done just to figure out that I am a generalist and not a particular specialism. So that's what I sort of adapted at the minute with the website, with a blog on and things like that, and just something to help people learn a bit more about what they can do with the things that are freely available.
Right, but as the generalist, you can be the hub that connects all the different pieces in a way that nobody else can.
Exactly.
And there's a huge amount of value in that.
Exactly, and that's what I was missing, personally. Didn't see that because you're always just dealing with the next thing. One thing that I always struggle to think about when we're stepping away, we mentioned the think about nothing and try and get into it. Although that'd be working, but I'd always slip straight back into looking for that one thing rather than acknowledge I have a general knowledge of a lot of things.
You mentioned that you had this realization when you were having a conversation with someone else.
That's right, yeah.
So I wondered if we could expand on that a little bit and talk about the kinds of help that can often be transformational when provided by those around us. What kinds of experiences have you had where you've had that kind of transformational help?
Well, I'm fortunate enough to work with people that are immensely good friends of mine, both in and outside of work. I mean, talking about the sort of the co-directors, co-owners of the business, we can have those frank conversations, which are direct. I'm not going to go over some of the things that were said because they're quite vocal, but very frank conversations, just like, snap out of it. You know, it was a bit of a frame of self-pity. It's like, what am I going to do? What can I do? That's what it was. And it did take from a number of different people that it's like, yeah, you can use this knowledge because nobody knows it. You are an expert in this field. It's like, oh yeah. It's a bit easy for me to say, yeah, that was it. But it really did take quite a bit of a pushing for me to realize that I do know this thing. Just because I was always on to the next thing at work and things like that. But it did take frank conversations and from the people you work with or friends. Fortunately, these people that we spoke with, they know my industry well, and I know the industry better than them in some ways. If that kind of makes sense.
Yeah.
Well, for them to say that, they've got a full understanding that my experience is entirely valuable and worthy.
Daniel, why do you think it's often so hard for us to appreciate what we're best at and where our true value lies?
In my industry, I think it's the fact that because I'm just constantly doing, that's just the norm. And you're always looking outside of your place to see what other people are doing. You're like, oh, wow, they're doing this, such a good thing. Focus on theirs rather than thinking, wow, the stuff we're doing is awesome. And it is. The stuff that all these people are doing is brilliant. But no doubt that other people have this mentality. You're always looking over the fence at what somebody else is doing rather than acknowledging your excellence inside.
Mm-hmm. Are there actions you can take with other people that will help you have a better understanding of your own value?
Well, look at that. We live in a creative location in a little town. We're surrounded by very creative cities that are very close to us. And there's a lot of social events on there. You can speak to like-minded people who are very open from different expertise. But the fact that you can have these conversations in detail and it'd be nothing, if that makes sense. It's like, it's just a heartbeat. You're just in a conversation and saying all these who are not in our industry, think massively geeky. Technical conversations, and it's just off the cuff. There's no thought. You're just reacting, you're just speaking. And then it's not just you're listening to somebody. It's an actual in-depth conversation about something, a past experience or how he dealt with something. It's just that to and fro, and it well worth having that. And it was nice to have an intellectual conversation.
So speaking of those kinds of conversations, sounds like you know some pretty fascinating people. Who do you know personally who is currently doing remarkable work?
I know a few people are doing exceptional things that are massively different. I want to talk about a couple of people that I work with. One of our directors is the designer. He is fantastic. He's got a real, real strength for creativity, not just behind the computer, but everywhere. He's exceptional. That's why I asked him to do all the design stuff for our wedding, which has worked out as a treat. His name is Kyle Wilkinson. And the work he is a real workhorse. He's one of the late night workers and he will stay up all night. And there's a few times where he stayed up until like 4 or 5 a.m. to work on a piece for the ones that he just wants to work with. So Time magazine.
Mm-hmm.
For those for the front cover. Stayed up all night for a few days. Just smashing it out. That work came from him just putting the work out there that he does. Simple as that. Visuals. There's nothing supporting it other than, I did this for this, I did this for these. It was all visual based. But then we've got people like, as you know, Mark Asquith, who's got Excellence Expected, his podcast, which is all about content and giving people actionable tips from other experts around the world in many different sort of industries, which has then led him onto podcast websites and things like that. It's all great. And these people are just striving and working and working and working by doing different things and learning things from different people that just help them go further. And then I've got a friend called Mark Goddard, who's just one day decided to quit his job, never look back, and he's been massively successful. Instantly, straight in, just successful from day one.
Mm-hmm. What kind of work does Mark do?
He is a user experience designer. That's what he started out as, you doing user experience. Now he considers himself an actual designer. That's what he's going into. But he's learned the wealth. His background was like mine as a developer. We did the same course at college and university. But yeah, he's just went out there and he's just learned massive amount of knowledge that he's gained from as a freelancer going into different organizations and things like that. It's massively impressive. I've got all these people around me, which is great.
It sounds very inspiring.
It is. They are very inspiring people. They're very, very good at what they do. Very good. It's very nice to be able to call them friends and be those people that you can just ask questions and talk to them about whatever.
Daniel, what are you working on now that's exciting?
I myself, as I mentioned just a bit briefly, is I've never actually had my own website. It's always been for work. But on the back of me having this turning point where I want to get out there and help people, I'm soon to be launching my website. And I'm actually going to be doing a podcast for people who have reached their turning point. And I base it on my own experiences. I am no longer a developer. I am something else. But there's been that entire switch in people's careers. Because I want to get people like that on board, figure out why they suddenly had a complete turnaround, what things they struggled with, the things they learned, and how they can help people going through the same sort of thing progress further. Something I'm very, very looking forward to.
That sounds very exciting. When do you think the podcast will be coming out?
The website will be going live inside the next couple of weeks. I would have thought podcast recordings will start towards the middle of next month. Get the wedding out of the way. All my spare time is dragged up with that one at the moment, which is nice.
I'm sure it's very nice. Daniel, how can listeners learn more about you?
But like I said, my website will be going live soon, which is going to be danmoore.com. But you can also catch me on by search for Daniel Moore on LinkedIn. I'm also on Twitter at Daniel_Moore. And you can check out hacksawstudio.com as well to see what we're up to.
That's great. Well, this has been a fascinating discussion about your own trials and tribulations in your business, your experiences, working with other people, getting help, trying to smash your own plateau. So thank you for coming on and sharing that with our listeners. My guest today on Smashing the Plateau has been Daniel Moore, co-founder of the UK design agency Hacksaw and all-around web expert. Thank you again, Daniel, for joining us.
Thank you. It's been great.